Welcome to Chapter 84 of the Kinsmen Die podcast, home of fantasy fiction based on Norse mythology that's written and read by me, my bishop. In this podcast, I read my first novel, Kinsmen Die, one chapter at a time. And with each episode, when it makes sense, I provide some commentary about the source materials I've referenced in the text. This week, we're back with Vidar Odinsson. We were last with Vidar in Chapter 81, during which he'd struck a bargain with the spirit inside him. He'd loosed her bonds in return for her direct help in killing the matron Snowbear, who'd torn through Vidar's warband and nearly killed Vidar himself. With his Fulgi's assistance, the matron Snowbear was easily dispatched, though Vidar suffered some wounds in the process, and many of his warriors were hurt or killed. So let's rejoin Vidar now. Chapter 84, Vidar.
All along the far ridge?
Vidar asked, leaning back into the dubious shelter of the tall boulder.
That's what I'd do.
Garlon tugged the cowl of his hood up. They now stood at the top of the ravine that just a few nights earlier they had marched out of. Unlike that first night in Utgard, the sky overhead was the dense white-gray wool of low-hanging clouds, from which blew a squall of snow and ice. Bitter gusts of wind shrieked through the jagged rocks and ice. The only benefit of the storm was that it prevented the Jotun warriors, who must be lying in wait for them, from using the short, black, recurved bows they favored.
If we could spare a couple warriors, we could get some idea of what's ahead, Garlon continued.
Vidar heard the clipped tone and unspoken concluding phrase.
But there's not enough of us left.
But Garlon's face, hollow-cheeked with exhaustion and hunger, was devoid of expression.
I will go.
Go where?
Scout ahead.
You can do that?
In answer, his Fulgia leaped from him and vanished into the storm. Apparently, now that he'd given up controlling her through the runes, she could go where she chose.
I'll take care of it, he said with a shrug he regretted as pain returned to his wounded shoulder. How far can you go?
He asked, not sure if she had to be present within him in order to hear him.
I'm not entirely sure.
Garlon opened his mouth to ask, but then seemed to realize that an unusual method of scouting was being undertaken.
Do you have a name?
Vidar asked his Fulgia.
Of course.
When nothing further came, he asked,
May I know it?
In time you may.
He suppressed a frown and adjusted the rough sling his left arm was in.
This may take a while. Might as well rest.
So together, he and Garlon crunched back through the knee-deep snow, buffeted by random gusts, his ankles almost rolling with every other step on the uneven ground. They stepped behind the lumpen line of boulders mounded with snow and ice where the warband hid. Once tucked in among the boulders, the wind's shriek dropped to a dull moan, and it grew oddly warmer. His 27 remaining fighters, mostly unwounded, had used their shields to mound the heavy, packable snow into walls and then, using groups of spears as columns with shields balanced on top, had formed a makeshift roof. These warriors of his, these stout-hearted men and women, had all taken turns carrying him through the night as his Fulgia worked her magic within him to quicken the healing of his wounds. Sadly, he'd no Sather left to similarly aid his warriors. Those who were awake nodded respectfully to him as he entered. They were all in a big huddle, leaning against each other for warmth. The fuel for the witch stoves had been used up. He didn't deserve their respect. He'd broken his warband as casually as a child breaks a toy. But he needed to know what was going on, why the Jotun had attacked. The worst part was, he still didn't know. He'd seen something at the frozen lake, but what, exactly? Only the Jotun knew. Nor had he learned anything about how the doorways worked, only that they existed. All he'd really succeeded in doing was getting his warband slaughtered.
There are 24 archers up here, tucked in among the rocks above the doorway.
Well, that settled that. The Jotun were here.
Any idea what tribe they're with?
Let me ask them.
Wait, what? Don't...
That was a joke.
Vidar shook his head and rubbed his tired eyes with one hand.
Can you tell me how exactly you even know what a joke is? A better question is how you know what a joke is.
Garrelon thumped down opposite him.
There are a couple dozen archers in the rocks above the doorway, Vidar said. The Kyolar took the news as if he'd expected it.
His eyes flicked sideways to the line of huddled warriors, dwelled there for a moment, and then returned to meet Vidar's gaze, and held it steadily, for too long. Anger rushed in, nearly swamping what he knew to be true, that his decisions had led to the destruction of his warband. But he'd had to do it. His father would have made the same decision. They had to know what was happening and why the Jotun had attacked. If he had leaned too heavily on Garlon's advice, they might never have reached that frozen lake or seen the Jotun at work. Maybe he didn't know exactly what they were doing, but now he knew that something was happening about which they knew nothing.
Look at him again,
his Fulgia said as she returned and settled back into him. His body warmed as she did. So he looked again and reconsidered. Maybe Garlon's expression had been more appraising than accusatory. More an unasked question than anything. Maybe the question had been, was it worth the lives spent? And maybe there was another question there as well. What will you do now? He blew out a breath and rubbed his eyes. Then he pushed himself up to his feet. Who could say if it was worth it, or perhaps even what he would do next? The Norns might, if they ever spoke. To his Fulgia, he said,
Tell me of those you scouted. Can we kill them? Yes, unless one such as we is among them.
That's possible. I mean, the Jotun can do, can become what we are.
Of course.
Will I be able to use my arm?
It wasn't broken, and I did encourage your flesh to heal.
It is somewhat better. He wondered if he could make the wound worse by using it.
He lifted his arm from the sling and let it hang, throbbing, small jabs of pain alternating with longer, more generous doses.
When we fight, it won't pain you.
Ignoring the look Garrelon directed at him, he felt at the small of his back for his knife. Gone, of course. He'd left it in the matron.
You're confident that even wounded as I am, we'll be able to kill them all?
And feed on them, remember.
Yes, that was also part of our bargain. Answer me.
His Fulgia smiled up at him from deep within himself.
What happened to the matron after I lent you my strength? There's a reason your father bound Disir to Asir.
Fair enough.
She extended her limbs through his and her strength flooded in. The cold vanished, as did the pain in his shoulder. His sight grew clearer, sharper. He extended an open hand to Garrelon.
I'll need your knife. I'll be back when the archers are dealt with.
Garrelon dragged a nearby snow-crusted bag toward him. He dug in it and presented something to Vidar.
Use these instead. We paid for them.
In each hand, Garrelon held one of the long, black-tipped horns that had once belonged to the matron. The base of each bore the ragged marks of an axe. Well, folks, that was Chapter 84 of Kinsmen Die. I hope you enjoyed it. Not much happening myth-wise, but quite a bit in terms of my world's magic system. Hopefully what I've done leaps out at you. Next week, we're back with Hodor. Until then, if you have the time and inclination, please rate or review the podcast. That helps boost the show's visibility, as does sharing it. As always, I'm going to read from both the Bellows and Larrington translations of the Hávamál, the sayings of the High One, Odin. Bellows, verse 84. A man shall trust not the oath of a maid, nor the word a woman speaks, for their hearts on a whirling wheel were fashioned, and fickle their breasts were formed. Larrington, verse 84. The words of a girl no one should trust, nor what a woman says, for on a whirling wheel their hearts were made, deceit lodged in their breasts. On first reading, Odin appears to be saying that women were made deceitful and one should never trust anything they say, which I suppose is a fair enough reading, but it lacks depth. Odin's neither foolish nor unwise, particularly at the end of his very long life, which is when, in my opinion, he speaks the Havamal, at least in the universe I've created. He's giving advice and reflecting on his experiences. He's known women and girls he trusts completely, like his wife Frigg, and those he doesn't, like Ungerboda, as well as those he respects but doesn't entirely trust, like Freya. In the early chapters of this first book, we met three women who Odin definitely does not trust at all. Do you remember who they are? They cluck, like hens in a yard. I choose to think that Odin had those three women in mind when he spoke this stanza. Thanks for listening.